Welcome to Stark Universe On Call. I'm Paul Friends, owner of Friends Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just to remind you how to join us, we have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or search for SFU on call or Starfleet Universe on call, and you'll find us there. Or if you want the best online experience, go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there, and you'll find the chat room, especially if it's during the hours of between 9:30 and like 10:30 on a Thursday night. Also, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to, you can follow me on Twitter/X/whatever it is this week. And that would be, you can, podcast account is SFU on call. Now my personal account is Paul Franz. That's PaulFranz. There's no T in that. And also Franz Games is my business account. So that's FranzGames. Again, there's no T in that. And of course, these lovely TalkCast gets into our podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Just Steve Petrick has kept working on the Orion Master Starship book. And that's it for this week. Moving onward to the SFB Online tournament. Well, tournament. That'd be the Sapphire Star 16 tournament. We have currently 14 signups. We only have 2 more slots left. So if you want in, you've got you sign up now or forever hold your peace. So go forward in that. When it comes to online client stuff, actually, I did get a little bit of online client stuff done this week. I thought about the one thing I wanted to work on, and I realized it's a lot of work, and I didn't have time, and I didn't have the architecture currently to support it. So it's like, okay, let's let that slide. But what I did get done is I did get it so that at this moment you actually can control the ship. After you select your ships, then what you can do is you can actually use command line commands to move the ship. You can move it. Or ships, or units. It doesn't have to be a ship. It could be fighters, could be drones. And you just say, like, slash left, and it will turn everything left. And if you turn, you say slash right, it'll turn everything right. And if you say straight, slash straight, it'll go straight ahead, and so forth. I still need a couple more when it comes to cover the whole range. Obviously, I have not added about face, and I have not added like back left and back right, and I need to do that. Didn't have words for it when I was creating it, and I didn't actually think about it at that time because I just wanted to make sure that actually it worked. So it worked. So that will be in the next update. Moving on, when it forward comes to the library, Frank has sent me some updates, which I need to do, some upgrades to the SFB Online tournament. SFB Online library for SFB. And we have nothing on for the FedCon library. And so with that is the news for this week. And it means the one and only Paul Friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have with us Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Yeah, not so bad. How about you?
Good, doing good. And we have Doug. How you doing, Doug?
I'm here. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. Had to do craziness a little bit today just because of my dear sweet son supposed to come in for this weekend to visit. And tomorrow was supposed to get snow. So My wife said, go fetch the boy. So I went and fetched the boy.
Aww.
So he's now sitting watching Batman at the at the moment, so sorry. Okay. He doesn't watch a lot of Star Trek. Sorry.
Well, if the Warner Brothers Discovery merger with Paramount has been rumored goes through, then maybe you'll see enter the Batter Prize.
Yeah. Oh, I really don't want that. Okay. When it comes to that, I understand that this mean that this might be consolidation. You know, that's what happens with a market. You know, you have a lot of smaller people, then you have a merge. Obviously, Warner's Brothers and Paramount are pretty big companies, and actually, the question is whether they will be allowed to merge or not. Don't know.
Well, when Disney bought Fox, they had to separate out the Fox properties, so right. that some of the Fox material stayed separate, and only part of the Fox empire, like for example, the rights to the Marvel properties that Fox had licensed, like the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, they were taken in by Disney and then were basically promptly reintegrated into Marvel Studios.
Right.
So it's possible that maybe something similar might happen. Like, for example, Warner Brothers has the rights to the Babylon 5 franchise. So then the question would be, would the merged portion of the company get Babylon 5? Or would that have to go to whatever is obliged to remain as an independent company?
Right. Well, that's the big question always is, at least in America, and I'm sure with other countries too, which is with the merger of, let's say, especially larger corporations who are considered almost top tier, you know, the top players in their industries. That, you know, there's a question that comes into being: will this create a monopoly? In which case, they might have to, as had been done earlier, as mentioned earlier by Gary, the divestiture of certain properties to have the regulators go, oh yeah, that's okay now. We won't sue you from actually taking this action, you know. So my biggest question would be, okay, what about, particularly Franz Joseph, that IP, and of course Star Trek, would probably go along the same lines. You know, would they still be part of the Warner Brothers Paramount? My guess would be yes. Or would they be forced to be divestiture of those properties? Because that has the real possibility of maybe, in theory, it shouldn't change anything when it comes to ADB, because of there's a license in place, a license that's been in place for decades, you know, because you know the licensing of the Franz Joseph technical manual, you know, that's the basis of SFB, there's pretty much left alone, so they don't try to get too close to the fire, you know, to the sun, you know, i.e. the Star Trek, the current Star Trek IP, you know, which sometimes it's hard to do, but you know, they're doing a good job. They keep it around, that so it doesn't get closed up and then shut up, you know, but to be just some another property owned by Paramount, which is going to be having licensing, you know, people on license and then never earn back all the money that Paramount wants them to have, wants them to earn, and go, okay, well, you're obviously not doing right by our IP. We're going to pull it from you. You know, that kind of thing. But, you know, there's always a question of how will another corporation handle it? Because in theory, it should handle it in theory the same way, because the licensing deal is the same. But the question is, how will they... will they be a little more lenient, more stringent? What, you know, what exactly?
On the one hand, I'm not an IP lawyer. there are people out there who literally make their living doing that. I know one of them. And but on the other hand, they should be okay. And as long as they don't break the agreement that they have in place, I mean, who knows? People are involved. People can be a little jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And they can also just kind of say, no harm, no foul. It would cost us more to see these guys than we would ever get from destroying them.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Or somebody could get a hair up their butt and say, we're going to clean out all the little actor groups. And that could be one of them that they try to act. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that.
I mean, they had a 10-year legal fight once. A ridiculously long fight that, you know, Amarillo came out on top on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you have contracts like that that are part of a company and the company gets bought out, generally they are going to have to be honored by whoever owns them because they bought that contract lock and stock.
Right.
Even though they didn't write it and they didn't sign it, that doesn't void it out unless there's language in the contract that says it does.
Oh, understood. But, you know, as I said, you know, as you pointed out, and, you know, I pointed out earlier also, which is, you know, okay, what kind of people are they going to be? Are they going to be sticklers and, you know, and look for every single little bit that they could possibly violate and then be able and find some kind of issue which will say, oh, you violated our contract?
Ultimately is money.
Right. Oh, and
the deal with that is that unless they think it's profitable for them to do it, they pretty much will, like, not do anything with it.
Right. Agreed.
There was a post about this on by Steve Cole on the BBS, and he was basically saying that it should be fine, but as long as they keep doing what they're doing, then there shouldn't be any problem.
Right. Oh.
But I guess what I was trying to get to is that it'd be curious to see, like, for example, because I think I wouldn't be surprised if one of the reasons why this potential merger was being talked about is what it might mean for both Max and Paramount Plus. So would it be a similar situation to because outside of the US, most countries don't have Hulu.
Right.
So Disney Plus basically has the Hulu material. It's basically like a sub-channel on Disney Plus called Star.
Right.
But in the US, it looks like they're basically either packaging Hulu together with Disney Plus, or they're just going to, maybe they'll fold it together because, you know, maybe Disney Plus will become a bigger thing for the
right.
US.
Right.
So maybe there's something similar will happen where Max and Paramount Plus will become Paramount Max or something like that, or... So,
well, that already happened because
you'd watch
HBO Max. Didn't they acquire like Discovery? I think it is, and they rolled that into HBO Max.
Discovery now.
Yeah, you know. So, and when it comes to other countries, yeah, that's one thing that's always interesting. Which is, since there's no Hulu, does not exist outside the country. And also things like, what is it? There's certain IP that's like, you can get it in, like, I think it's UK, I think it is. I'm actually Canada, where it's broadcast. I think it's Canada, where.
So Okay, let me explain. So the Orville, for example,
right,
is a Hulu show. At least season 3 was. We don't know if season 4 is going to happen. In Canada, the Orville is on Disney Plus.
Right.
Because you know how like when you go to Disney Plus, you've got different headings. There's a Marvel heading, there's a Pixar heading, there's a other kind of like, you know, I forget the other ones, like a Star Wars heading and so on. So up here, there is an additional heading that's called Star. And Star is where basically all of those kind of like 20th Century Fox or other kind of IPs that were basically inherited or that would ordinarily be on Hulu in the US, with a few exceptions that were basically licensed out to other streamers before the Disney Fox purchase happened. So on Disney Plus in Canada, if you go onto the Star heading and then look for science fiction, you'll see the Orville. So, and similarly, for example, like the reboot of Futurama, well, not reboot, but the sequel to the current season of Futurama, that is Hulu-rama in the US, but it's Disney Plus / Star-rama up here. So, but what happened, what you're thinking of, though, is up until recently, it's over now, but there had been a bespoke agreement where instead of Paramount Plus, because Paramount Plus didn't exist at the time that this earlier agreement was arranged, but there was a company called Bell Canada. It has its own streaming service called Crave. And for a while, Crave was actually the exclusive home for the current streaming shows like Strange New Worlds and so forth. But and then also as part of the deal, Bell's over like a cable network or satellite network, whatever, called CTV Sci-Fi Channel, they would actually broadcast shows like Star Trek Discovery and Strange New Worlds and so on. So what's happened since is Paramount Plus has taken over the streaming rights in Canada, with the exception of Star Trek Prodigy, because you might know that Star Trek Prodigy is now on Netflix in most countries. So here in Canada, it's going to show season two, when season two comes out. It's going to air on television, I think. I believe so, on CTV Sci-Fi Channel. But it's also going to be available on the CTV app, so not on Crave for some reason. But yeah, basically, I believe that CTV Sci-Fi might still have broadcast rights to Star Trek TV shows. Don't quote me on that. It's like it's complicated. But yes, basically, there was a time where Canada was the only country in the world where the current Kurtzman era live action and animated Star Trek series were being broadcast, which is fair for some of them because both Discovery and Strange New Worlds are made up here. But Picard and I believe Lower Decks are made in California. So, it's interesting to see how things are panning out. But speaking of IP, there was a time, you might recall, like at the time when the Abrams movie came out, there was actually a split in terms of the on-screen IP because CBS at the time was separate from Paramount Movies or Paramount Pictures.
Right.
So any Star Trek that was on television, I think it had to be something like 20 or 30% different from the Star Trek that was being shown in the movie theaters by Paramount rather than CBS. But since they were basically brought back under the same roof once again, so the television and movie IP is once again reunited. I don't think that applies because the thing is that no one knows if there's ever going to be another Kelvinverse movie, or if there is a movie, is a new movie, is the new movie going to be in the prime timeline or some other timeline or whatever. So we'll have to see. But in any case, whatever's going to happen going forward, it's going to be part of, well, I mean, depending on what happens with the Warner Brothers Discovery thing. But but even now, I think it's something like you have to get some of the movies on one service and some on another.
Yeah.
Complicated, whatever, because you know, there's a broader issue as to like what's going to happen to streaming services, because part of the whole reason why a lot of these shows were pulled from Netflix is because they thought that they could do better with their own streaming networks
instead of
Netflix. But it feels like Disney is the only one that can make it work because they're big and powerful enough to have it, but even they're struggling.
Also Disney also acquired Hulu, too. You know, so that makes things quite interesting by itself. Now, obviously, there's always been discussion about that merger altogether, which is that the two services will probably never be combined just because of the target audiences for each of the streaming apps. Hulu is more of adultish, meaning, you know, everyday kind of streaming, episodic, and that kind of thing, while Disney Plus is more targeted towards kids and, you know, what Disney is known for, you know, that brand is known for. You know, oh, just one quick thing, which I brought up the Wikipedia article for Star Trek Prodigy, because I've never heard of it. It's like, what is Star Trek Prodigy? I've never heard of that. And I did not realize that basically it was on the streaming service Paramount Plus, big surprise, because that's where all the Star Trek has been. Don't get me started on season 2 of Picard. I saw the first episode and I went, I'll pass. You know, so I never watched season 2 of Picard. I didn't like the premise of the whole thing. So like, I'll skip.
Here's season 3 is a lot better, just so you know.
Yeah, I didn't even know season 3 was out, to be honest. I knew before you told me, but you know, I didn't know. I think I heard about it maybe 6 months ago or something like that, something weird. But anyway, also it was Star Trek Prodigy being a 3D animated series, as you pointed out, it is an animated series. The target audience is younger, and therefore also it was broadcast on the Nickelodeon channel. For those of you who have kids, because when we had cable back when our kids were young, we watched a lot of Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon was one of the channels that we almost had on the TV constantly, just because the kids like, you know, the kids like the shows that are on the, like, what, but also there's the Disney Channel which the kids also loved, and Lord knows my son still watches the YouTube videos of like the Disney Channel games, that kind of thing, which is, I mean, they're old. They are, at this point, some of the episodes for that are like 15 years old, you know, and you get to see these stars that were brought up through the Disney brand and so forth, and how, so you see them when they're really that young, you know. So, as a lot of those kids, I'm not sure what they're doing these days. I'm thinking about the one girl that was a singer. That's the daughter of, her name was Miley Cyrus. That was it, Miley Cyrus. Daughter of Billy Cyrus. That's what I was thinking of. But anyhow.
So, yeah, basically, Prodigy had been canceled by Paramount Plus, but then it was shopped around and picked up by Netflix. So in the US and other countries, season 2 will be on there. But, I mean, it's still a canon show. Mm-hmm. It's set in the prime timeline.
Right.
It's set in the 2380s or so forth. So, and it's got Kate Mulgrew's in it. She's she voices Janeway in it, and they've got a few other characters from Legacy series in there too. Because part of the point of the show was to basically be a way to kind of like introduce various concepts that are part of Star Trek lore to somebody who had never seen it before, and basically, you know, help them like get a sense of what's going on in the universe, whatever, like, you know, what to look out for going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But so what was I going for? Something. But I guess it'd be curious to see how that all pans out. But I forgot.
Oh,
but,
great.
There was a non-streaming topic I wanted to bring up, but I guess I don't know if you want to wrap this one up first or not.
Yeah, I'm gonna wrap this up really, really quick. About Prodigy, real quick. It's also on the Wikipedia page. They say it's the second season, which is picked up on Netflix, was supposed to be released in 2024. But of course, my guess If it's 2024, it might be a late 2024 just because of the Ad Astra strike. SAG Astra strike. You know, the writers and, well, and so
actually, I think that most of the work on season two is already finished. Like, it's a lot of it's in the can. So it might be earlier in the year. I'm pretty sure they said something about early to mid-2024. So keep an eye out for when the launches, because I think season one might already be on Netflix now. It's actually a good show.
It should be. Cause
it's a very different type of show to Lower Decks, because it doesn't have, you know, Lower Decks is much more, you know.
Adultish humor?
Different kind of humor, let's say. Yeah. But, I mean, it's, although actually, there's a really funny crossover episode that they did between Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds.
Yes, I know.
But,
I saw that episode. Yeah. And it's like, wow. Actually, I think, to be honest, I think it was a neat episode overall. And it may, I say that because it may be interested in Below Decks. That's all. Though I have not gone forward in actually trying to find Below Decks. I forget what streaming service it's available on. I can look it up.
It should be on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, which is another reason, because I canceled my Paramount Plus after I went through all the episodes of Strange New Worlds. It's like, okay, I'll wait for that to come back around, and then I'll resubscribe for like a month or two, and then cancel again and so forth. Which actually reminds me, I have to get on my wife, because we right now have Peacock. The only reason we have Peacock is because she wanted to watch Yellowstone. And, well, she hasn't watched Yellowstone lately, so the question is, should I keep it or should I cancel it for now? That's one great thing about currently.
Yeah, we don't have Peacock up here, so I'm pretty sure shows like Yellowstone. There's other streamers, like Canadian specific ones,
mm-hmm.
that license the shows like that, but I couldn't tell you which one it is. So
understood. But that's the one great thing about streaming.
But we get Netflix and we get Disney Plus, and mm-hmm. we get Paramount Plus, which actually is technically Paramount Plus Canada, because it doesn't have the same shows as Paramount Plus US.
Right.
But we have a few other ones like Crave, the one I mentioned. And I think there's another one, Stack TV. It's tied to another broadcaster called Global.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we can get access to PBS Passport, because one of the PBS affiliates, the one that's in Buffalo, New York, they also take subscriptions from Southern Ontario. So they make the Passport service, subscription service available to Canadians, at least in Ontario, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also Canada's English language public broadcaster, CBC. They have their own streaming service called CBC Gem. So they stream, they actually stream some like shows from other countries like the UK and stuff. But I guess their primary mandate is to promote Canadian content. So in the US, there's a thing called, what's it called? Not Ovation. It's like there's some sort of, basically, there's some sort of service that's in the U.S. And what their whole thing is that they license period dramas and shows from other countries and from the U.S. as well.
Okay.
So, yeah. For example, there is a show called Murdoch Mysteries. And it used to be called The Artful Detective in the U.S., but now it's called Murdoch Mysteries. It's actually set in Toronto. It starts off in 1895. And it goes on, it's still going on, so it's up until like 1911 or 12, because each year is a new season. And whatever that network service is that's in the US gets it, as well as similar shows from like Australia and the UK and so forth. So that might be one checking out, because some of those period dramas can be quite interesting. So.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. But I was going to mention about streaming services is that the great thing about streaming services these days is that you can easily cancel and resubscribe to them on a whim. You know, you're not stuck in for subscribing for the next year. You know, though somebody tells me at some point that will happen. You know, to basically force people to stay on their service for at least a minimum period of time. Currently, I kind of have that with Disney, but that's just because of I currently pay on a yearly subscription for Disney, just because I know I'm gonna keep them. I know I'm not gonna cancel them. Just because it's not for me, because I don't watch Disney that much. It's mainly for my kids, for my son, and for my daughter. They really like it. You know, there's only one show I really liked on Disney, which was Hawk. You know, so the rest I can get out. I can get other places. So whatevs. Moving on, onward and forward. There'll be more Starfleet universe, Star Trek related, at least. You know, even if it doesn't need to be specific property, at least adjacent. actually, the topic for this evening, before the night gets completely away from us, I wanted to talk about some of the monsters in SFB, because I thought that's one thing we rarely talk about. And one of the reasons why actually I am currently interested in it is that for all those listening right now, that unless you actually have listened to the news portion, you might not have heard about it. You definitely would not have heard about it, which is one thing I did during my little break, my little quote-unquote vacation for my holiday. On the 15th of January, which is my birthday. Yes, happy birthday to me. Yeah, thanks. Thank you for the happy birthday on Facebook, Doug. And I did actually see it. And that is that I worked on basic command line commands, so that, you know, what you can do is you can type in, at the moment, it's just basic stuff. It's, you know, I think I mentioned it last week. The game I was playing last week. Oh, Jeff's here. Where you can, it's awful. I can't remember the game. But basically, what the main thing, what got me interested in doing that was that this game I was playing, the game was a D and I forget, where you actually have these drones which investigate ships and so forth. And the way you play the game is using, obviously the keyboard, but also you can tell the drones to do things by commands, which I found fascinating. It's like, ooh, I like this. And actually, I played it for a little bit of time. I always feel, here's a really weird thing, and it might be just something for me, and that is I always feel bad about playing games that are not related to SFB or FedCom or ADB property or something that's related to, you know, the product that I create mainly, because I feel like I am wasting my time by playing some other game, you know. So it was just
Hey Paul.
Yeah.
Take your right hand and move it across your face at high speed. Just for God's sake, man. You're not cheating yourself. You're not cheating on SFC. You're having fun.
Understood. And there's
like, we had fun with the three different games, four different games. The none of them being SFB or ADB or Star Trek related on the New Year's Eve. You know, New Year's Eve day. Perfectly fine. I absolve you on your confession of guilt. Good Lord, man. Right. I don't feel guilty if I play WoW instead of you.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
I'll go back to Eve and apologize and say, I'm sorry, dude. Just, I don't know what got a hold of me. I couldn't help myself. WoW just kind of sucks me.
Understood.
I'll never do it again until tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
No need to feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
None at all.
Yeah.
You had fun?
Understood. Yeah, I had fun playing it. And it's kind of a puzzle game too, which invariably, that's not the funny thing. I've listened to Three Moves Ahead. They haven't put out an episode this week yet. I'll probably get another episode like next week. But anyway, the great thing about Three Moves Ahead is that they talk about these games, which I've never played because I, Lord knows, I don't have the time that they have when it comes to the amount of game time they spend. Because most of the guys are professional game reviewers, you know. So, you know, that's their job. But anyway, and that is that invariably I listen to these guys and they seem to overall, you know, it seems like gameplay to them is like, it's like a big puzzle. Whether, and for some of these games, well, most of the games, including if it's just, if it's like a tactics game or a strategic game, because Three Moves Ahead is mainly about strategic games, it's like you're playing the game, and then what you're trying to do is a lot of times they're playing against the computer. And so they're trying to figure out what the computer is going to do, which to me it just sounds like they're trying to figure out another puzzle. You know, so invariably a game seems to, like, when it comes to the games on the computer, seem invariably related to a puzzle of some sort, whether it is directly or indirectly. You know,
technically chess is basically a big math puzzle in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. It's every game, whether it's a board game, a role playing game, or, you know, computer game, it's a system.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have humans and you stick them in any kind of system or have them interact with it, they're going to try to game it. They're going to try to figure out how to get around it, how to do the thing the most efficient way. What breaks it. In that respect, some people never like grow up. That's okay. That's all part of the fun experience of gaming.
Stop.
There's playing, and there's, well, playing. You're playing around with the thing. And they are playing the game, but they're also playing the system of the game.
Right. Understood. Can you stop? Sorry, the local Zinni is being cute, though. I actually got him an actual chair that he can actually lay on back there. Yes. So if you want to, you can stay close. Oh yeah, yeah. But anyway, so you know, I had a little bit of command line, so you can actually control your ship. You know, right now it's just currently just movement. You know, I'd love to expand it some more, and you know, possibly have it so that you can do more and more stuff using just the command line without actually having to use the mouse and click this, click that. No cat. But then, you know, I think that'd be kind of neat. And one thing that came to my mind actually was the idea of, okay, what we can do, because there's one thing that invariably people like to do, which is play the monster scenarios. You know, it's a solo game. And the idea is kind of non-slick, But at the very least, it will allow you to do it, which is add the ability to, for example, have it so you have a command like monster move. And what that will allow, what would allow the client to do is if you're playing a monster scenario and recognize, okay, this piece, or if you have to assign, okay, assign monster, you can, okay, this unit is the monster unit. And then it can then, it should be able to, from that, know what kind of monster it is. And the idea is have it so that any rules that apply to movement for that monster hold true, and therefore it can then move as according to the monster. So instead of you actually having to move the monster yourself, the client can do. You just say, okay, slash monster move, and it'll move the monster. You know, obviously that can be later on added as a button, but you know, first things at a time, you'll see how it works just as a command, and have it so that for the monsters that are possible, you know, some of them are easier than others, obviously, have it so that, you know, maybe be able to play a solo game using the client and using these monster commands. Like, for example, I'm looking at Igneous? Yeah, Igneous is what it is. It's Monster Scenario SM8. It's called A Stone's Throw. Heading on a collision course for a dense populated planet, there's a huge planetoid. Codename Igneous, a starship sent to the Virtual Menace, is greeted by a hail of weapons. Now, some of these, I'm not sure it would be possible, because for this one, just like for dragons, they have seeking weapons. So seeking weapons are a little more difficult to do and so forth. But anyway, it describes Ignis is the enemy. It is a robot battle station built by an extragalactic power. It moves at a speed of 1 hex per turn on impulse 32. So it's a very slow moving target. In direction C, directly moving toward the planet. So obviously, you know, what could be done easily is just put Igneous someplace. Okay, now your target is here, so you're going to be seeking. So it can be like a seeking weapon. I have an engine which actually should be able to calculate the direction. Actually, I know it can calculate the movement that Igneous would have to do. Impact of Igneous on the planet will destroy both. Igneous can be destroyed by 600 points of damage. Obviously, the one minor issue at the moment is I don't think we have Igneous, the actual monster itself, in the client, which is something that I'd have to do is make sure any monster that I want to add are actually part of the client. You know, whether it's in the library or actually embedded in the client itself. Ignis has 6 weapons. 1 is lost with each 100 points of damage scored. Weapons are destroyed in order of 1, 3, 5, 2, 4, 6. Each weapon Ignis fires once per turn. Each weapon has a 120-degree arc. Each turn has to complete. Each turn after the ship has completed any allocation applied to its movement, the player rolls 1 die, 6 for each of the 6 weapons. This determines a type as follows. Oh. So basically, let me look at this. So let's make sure that, yeah, for each turn, that's what it says. So each turn, the Igneous gets to have 6 different weapons, possibly 6 different weapons. From a plasma R torpedo to a hellbore, can be a mauler. Mauler as per assumes 20 units of power. A drone rack, a photon torpedo, a phaser 1, a disruptor bolt, Type F plasma, fusion beam, a TR beam, wow, a tractor repulsor, wow, or a PPD.
That has a random weapon effect, basically.
Yeah. And as this, as the rule says, basically it gets to, you have to roll randomly each turn, each and every turn after the ship is allocated to select six new weapons. So it might be, a couple drone racks, a phaser one, two disruptor bolts, and a fusion beam, one turn. The other one, it might be, if you roll badly enough, you could actually have six plasma Rs. You want to... Yikes!
I see nothing wrong with this.
I'm actually pretty sure that there's an update file in one of the captain's logs,
right,
that it includes lists for, like, if you're using an Ignis with Omega weapons or LMC weapons, and how you determine those. But speaking of captain's log, if you ever look at the front cover for Captain's Log 41, mm-hmm, you can actually see a picture of Ignis, because it looks like a gigantic volcanic six-sided star.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. That's weird. Okay.
But I wonder, would it be better? Because actually, on a side note, anytime that there's a monster added to Federation Commander, they actually produce a specific ship card for it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for likes of Juggernauts, which are starships, so they need, even an SFB, they need SSDs. But ones that ordinarily are just a stat block that you have to figure out yourself in SFB, FC actually gives you the ship card. So, for example, the recent Gunboats Attack PDF that went up,
mm-hmm,
it has a sheet with Banshees on it.
Right. I know exactly what you're talking about. And even SFB, they have an SSD for like a dragon. For dragons. And that one was kind of needed because of the different parts of the dragon that can get hit. You know, head, wing, body, tail, claws, that kind of thing. And that's why they actually have an SSD for that. But yeah, you're right. The FedCom actually has a lot of these monsters, has actually cards for each of the monsters, which is quite cool.
But what I was thinking is that if you wanted to have like an automated thing, it might be better to start with some of the relatively simple ones, like Banshees or the Sun Snake or something like that. Something that's kind of like, it's got a set goal and it's constantly trying to work its way towards that goal. And then you're showing up as the player. You basically trigger X, Y, Z to happen or whatever. So it's, but then from that, you could then move on to a more dynamic monster, like the Space Mantle that's in Captain's Log 40. That's actually designed to be a single player thing as well, but the Manta is more agile, and because it's after you, it's not after like a planet that you're, or a base or a star that you're trying to protect.
Right.
And, so yeah, basically there's for some of the really more, let's say like the Juggernauts and stuff, yeah, those are really intended to be, you know, human operated.
Right.
You know, if humans are the ones that you're playing with on the tabletop, I guess. But those are, because actually I think we mentioned before is that the Juggernauts have actually been expanded upon.
Right.
Not quite fully, but partially towards the concept of being a Juggernaut Empire. So if you look on Shapeways, you can see the miniatures to represent the Juggernaut frigate all the way up to the Juggernaut battleship.
Mm-hmm.
And they've added like new weapon systems, like the Shriek missiles and so on. So there's more to the Juggernauts, and even more still, because I'm hoping that in the future we might see more of the kind of logistical units that you would need to have the Juggernauts run as an Andromeda-esque empire.
Right.
So, anyway. That's a little bit more further down the road, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I think it sounds like from what you're going for is something like the Banshee. Actually, I should note about the Banshee. There's actually two varieties of them. One of them is in Captain's Log, and it's an extragalactic version of the Banshee, which is actually more dangerous than the one that's in the galaxy. So I forget which issue of Captain's Log that one is in. But yeah, so basically, oh yeah, because there's actually a scenario where the extragalactic Banshees try to attack a Sartorian nest ship because they see the nest ship as a future nest for themselves.
Ah.
So the Sartorians basically are having to try to fight them off before it's too late. I think it's Captain's Log 39, 38, one, something like that anyway. But yeah, so that actually might be an interesting thing to program as well, is where you could do version A of the program that you're trying to create. Could be for the run-of-the-mill in the galaxy Banshees. And then version B could be the more powerful extragalactic ones.
I think it might be Caps Log number 39? I'm just saying, because I'm seeing, I did a quick search for Banshees and came up with an after-action report about, and that came up with about the Banshees. Da-da-da. We got the Banished in the Void, which is playtest scenario SP085. Okay, that's VidCon topic. Oh, that's a good one. Has it? Okay, fine. Monster Special Rules, Caps Log number 41 for Banshees. But I think I'm assuming that's the one.
Well, no. So 41 actually has a Sartorian scenario where they're fighting juggernauts. But what has also been in recent issues of Captain's Log is a monster update, so to speak.
Right. So, right.
Each issue, they basically take. There's an Igneous issue as well, and what they do is that basically for that particular issue, they'll go into a lot of detail in terms of like where you'll expect to encounter this monster, what its reactions can be, and what kind of interactions exist for it beyond the ones in the initial scenario it's created for. So, for example, you know how in Omega there's the Alunda?
Mm-hmm.
They're like the space whales. So there was a scenario in one of the Omega books about the wild Alunda creatures that are domesticated to become the Alunda starships. And so a recent issue of Captain's Log actually has a monster article about them. So basically helps explain, like, you know, what they are, what their role is in the galactic ecosystem, and how you represent them in game terms and so forth, beyond that one scenario that they were introduced in. So and there's similar other ones. There's one, I think, for the Space Borg. That was one from the early years modules in the Alpha Octant, because the idea is that when the early ISC history was being written, they basically came up with the idea that their actions when they were expanding into space triggered, because they were digging into the nesting areas for them, so mm-hmm. they were triggering these stampedes in Space Force. But the original Space Force scenario doesn't talk about stampedes, so the monster update file, or whatever you call it, that is about Space Force has a section that outlines how you handle the Space Force in a stampede situation. So that might be something interesting too, because I think the Space Borer, it has a similar kind of like, they're not really intended to be used by players. So you could basically look through the programming, so to speak, in the original scenario for Module Y1 for mm-hmm. small numbers of Space Borers. And then if you want to do the Space Borer Stampede, you could peel through the monster article to be able to give a second version of the scenario to people who want to try them out.
Yes, I love you. Goodbye. Sorry, Local City is just being very, very cute at the moment. So I got a little distracted there. But yeah, I agree. Where is it? Just want to look at was another one actually, which should be, I think, is pretty simple, which is the death probe. I have to look. The scenario is SM9, which is the alarm goes out from a highly populated region of the Empire, and unknown something is destroying planets. It might be extragalactic or an enemy's secret weapon. Consider the power of this monster and a squadron sent out to destroy it. Squadrons need to be like 600 BPV of ships placed there. Yikes.
Death probe. Got a ship card in Fed Commander as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I've got that. I think I have a lot of the ship cards. I will not say definitively.
I don't think they're as interesting as the Juggernauts, to be honest, because I think when it comes to the monsters that ADB created, I think the Juggernauts really stand out compared to all the others. That's probably why
agreed.
They're such a good candidate to be upgraded to full Empire status.
Yeah, but at the same time, the Juggernaut...
will be Starspawn.
Yeah, but the big thing about the Juggernaut is, at least, especially after they introduced the Beta and the other Juggernauts, you know, because they're actually spaceships is what they are. You know, because some... A good bit of the monsters. The thing is, most of the monsters, except for like the Death Probe Igneous, a lot of them are actually space creatures that live in space. Whether it's a dragon or what's that one with the
amoeba.
Yeah, the space amoeba. Of course, the banshees. The creature. Yep. And most of them actually aren't actually ships, and the juggernauts are the closest thing to actual units. You know, something that you actually can imagine. Having, because it's SSD, it's actually an actual ship. I can understand why, that you prefer that, because of you can actually play like that. In the case of, and the one thing about also the original Juggernaut scenario in Capital Look number one is that it's designed for a combined unit action, and a lot of times that those combined units, you can actually have multiple people playing it, so which really in my mind is a much better scenario overall, because of you get you can actually act as the captains of the thing. The whole idea is that you become part of the story and so forth. And you can basically play out the scenario as it reads in the actual story itself. You can actually play it. You can be part of the story, which I obviously makes it an even better scenario. Obviously you can play it yourself, cause it is again, overall, at least the original one, it's an automated monster. Obviously, if you want to, you could, in theory anyway, put in have an actual player playing the Juggernaut, and say forget about the rules that drive the computer, the computer on the Juggernaut. You're going to be the computer. You're going to be smarter than, or even maybe worse, then the computer's there, and you can play it out that way, which is, in my mind, interesting. Well, that's interesting. I was just reading the scenario And one thing is, one of the variations, and that is, instead of, for against the Death Probe, instead of using a squadron, use two or three Space Dragons. Which, in my mind, not a bad idea. Makes things definitely, I think, a little more interesting. And other variations allow the defending player to use a BPV to establish a defending planet with a minefield, defend satellites, or ground bases. The defending player, in this case, would be well advised to ensure that he had a number of fighters and or PFs to defend in his defensive force, i.e. have a mobile portion of his defensive force. Otherwise, the Death Probe could just destroy a few installations and move off to a long range and make repairs. Then repeat the procedure until one arc of the planet has no further defense to fire. Initial setup is, in this option is taken, is modify the planet placement in 2215, the probe entering in turn one on any map edge. But, you know, Death Probe is, doesn't have energy allocation. However, it must plot any changes in speed during energy allocation phase. Death Probe does not have any batteries. It kind of, so far, it always has power for all its functions, which is has two phaser fours, six photons, both of those from FA Arc, six phaser ones, 360, two phaser Gs, 360, and two drone racks with unlimited type ones. There's no need to reload because it's automatic. They just materialize in the drone racks. Wow. And able to launch one drone per turn. Unlimited sequence fire control, which is, wouldn't we all like to have that? Quarter turn between firing. You cannot be tractored. Movement. Okay, Depo can move at any speed from 0 to 32. Has a turn mode of A. Can perform two hijacking turns at any speed each turn with no chance of breakdown. The Death Probe cannot perform rack maneuverings and is a size class one object for purpose of triggering mines, and the Death Probe cannot enter any atmosphere or land. And as it talks about the EW, mines, Death Probe is a minesweeper for purpose of detecting and sweeping mines. This seems like it's more of a ship when it comes to that. And actually, Death Probe is definitely a two-player one, which is that's not the kind of monsters I'm looking for. I'm looking for ones which basically have automated rules, like combining of.
What about a Star Swarm then?
Say it again.
Star Swarm.
The first one.
Star Swarm. Yeah, they're on Shapeways. They're fighters, but they're like von Neumann machines. Basically, they're able to self-duplicate. I think they're basically, because you know the way Banshees are designed to be target practice for PFs.
Mm-hmm.
Star Swarms are meant to be kind of practice for fighter users.
I have to find that one. Right now, because right now I'm going through SCB module S1 is where I'm finding these monsters at the moment. Wow.
I don't know if Star Swarm is in module J1 or J2, or if it's in maybe it's in a captain's log, but I know for sure that there's I'm pretty sure that there's a monster article about it in a different captain's log. And also, as I say, you can get a sprue of them on Shapeways. So if you want to play out the Star Swarm scenario on the tabletop, then that helps support that. But you know what there might be is you know how like on the ADB website, if you go to the A to Z index, mm-hmm. under D for downloads, they actually have someone has created a set of PDFs, and the PDFs basically tell you, they go empire by empire, and they tell you which module each ship for that empire is in. So if you have a look on there, there might be one that actually lists the monsters.
Okay, da-da-da-da. I'm sure that's pretty old. Okay, got a table of contents. Stuff like missions.
Well, there's one that says table of contents, monster scenarios, SM0.0.
Yeah, I. Okay, let me go back. So, downloads, let's go to the monsters. And blah, 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 blah. Okay, I don't see it as part of the normal thing. Okay, let me do a search. Monster scenarios. If I get a spell. Not sure that's the case. Da, da, da. Maybe. Let's look. Okay, this is just. Oh, okay. There they are. Actually, this is it. SM 1 through 18, including Module 1, which is the boar hunt. SM 1 is the planet crusher. Ice monster and the metamorph. And Module C4, monsters, monsters, monsters. I'm not. I don't remember that scenario. And of course, Module K is Banshees. Module G1, page 42 has a list of monsters and how they are played. Next number 12, the table, Module G1. That's right. Do I have Module G1?
Well, actually, just so you know as well, I was just looking on Shapeways as well, and if you go through the different Empire headings, mm-hmm. there's a heading for monsters. Now, this does not include Juggernauts or Dragons, because they have their own separate heading, but it does include Starsworn, includes the Death Probe. There's like three different sizes of Death Probe miniatures you can get, and there's the Moray Eel of Space, there's the Space Amoeba, there's the Planet Killer, many different sizes of the Planet Killer. There's the Space Manta, there's the Igneous as well. So all those monsters have miniatures as well, and depending on your budget, you can get the different sizes of them, depending on whether you want, for example, the Igneous comes in small, medium, and large size.
Understood. Where is him? Don't mind me. Oh, there you go. Okay, experience points. Okay. Okay. I'm looking at the Annex number 12 monster table. Monster data table, which is, I think it's just monster scenarios. Because it says SG-31, it says intruder humanoid, which is the size. That's weird. SL-192, the orb. Juggernaut, which is SL, got two of them, which is, of course, SL1. And also SL-246. Crab, Sharks, Malaki, and the bass. Oh, I think I remember the bass. Oh, what's that one? Hold Until Relieved, I think it was the scenario. Oh, it was the story. I guess that's... possibly.
I'm still trying to figure out where the Star Swarm is.
Where the what is? Well,
I'm still trying to figure out where which module the Star Swarm is in.
Understood. Yeah, Dave was pointing out the Appendix 12.
Is it SM-12.0? Is that sound right? Module J, I think.
Yeah, Module J. That has a Star Swarm. Yeah. SM-12.
Yeah, so that should be a good one to investigate in terms of if you want to have an automated monster for the client.
I think, the one that I did look at briefly on Monday actually was SM-1, the Planet Crusher, which seemed to be possible. It seemed to have its challenges just because of it depends on certain things, like if there is a ship within a certain, I think, I want to say range 2, but I think it might be range 6, that it will fire, it will go after the ship instead of going after the planet. Obviously, the idea is to have it so that the Planet Crusher follows the ship and doesn't go towards the planet, because if the Planet Crusher is right beside the planet, you lose. The planet's dead. Definitely.
That's a similar one for the Sunsnake, except that it's trying to destroy the entire star.
Right. I bought actually the basic set. Oops, wrong one. Let me go back to here real quick. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. I closed it. Okay, I don't have it up. There's a basic rule. So I actually spent like the $20 to actually get the Captain's Edition basic set, because I wanted to get the monster scenarios, because the electronic master rulebook, it has just the rules. It doesn't have the scenarios. There it is, monster scenarios. Okay, yeah. During the movement phase, if a starship is at range 2 hexes or less from the monster will pursue the starship. If 2 more starships are within the quote unquote detection range, the monster will follow the closer one. If 2 are the same range, the monster will follow the larger one. If they're both the same size, then you do a die roll. The far moves adjacent to the planet, it will cease movement unless it moves to follow a starship. Okay. So if you cannot escape the monster by sublight disengagement, but if a ship is more than 6 hexes from the monster, it will ignore it. Okay. Actually, I was right. I remembered it. 2 hexes, and actually, it is 2 hexes. So you got to get really darn close to this sucker. And on the first impulse, the monster detects is within 6 hexes of a starship. Oh, so there's that's where I got 6 hexes. It will fire its weapon. This operates as a phaser, but uses a special chart below. And that's die roll of 1, 34, 35 points of damage. Die roll 2, 30, 3, 25. So die roll 4, 25, 15, and 6, 10. So minimum of 10 points of damage. And maximum of 35, which can hurt. The range has no effect on the result. Range has no effect on the result, but the weapon is limited range of 6 hexes. The weapon is 360. So, which is a little different than the actual Planet Crusher one from Star Trek, which seemed like it had to be in front. But anyhow. Okay, well,
I'm trying to remember if that matches what the ship card says in FC, because I could have sworn that it had phaser fours or something, but they were mounted in the front. I mean, I'm sure maybe the ship card is available on the commander circle online somewhere, but I don't know. It's probably not worth checking right this moment, though.
Yeah, I'm, if I had time, I'd go dig through my ship cards, because I think I gathered all the ship cards for the monsters and put them all together in a single spot so I could show all the cards. But anyhow, I really need to get going. It's getting a little late. We rambled on through this episode of monsters and Star Trek shows.
Okay.
Yep. Jeff, hi, bye, thanks for coming.
Good night. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah,
let me holler sometime this weekend if you have some time.
Okay, well sure we'll, Doug. Gary, always a pleasure. You have a good night.
And if you ever feel bad, if it helps you feel any better about skipping out on the Starfleet universe, just bear in mind that there is a battle that takes place in Battletech in Amarillo. So pick that up if you want.
Okay, will do. Okay. Excuse me, kitty. Love you. Okay, sorry. Had to put my kitty down so I could actually end the podcast. So had a nice little discussion about multiple multiple Star Trek shows, movies, and other IP related to those, and obviously got a little sidetracked there and just discussing a possible winner. Paramount, the merger, and of course, you know, some streaming services, but hey. That went a little bit off the rails, a little bit, but you know, we got to talk about some of the monsters. I would love to continue on that note, you know, talking about some of the other monsters that are out there, because there are many of them. Obviously, we need to have a heck of a lot more time to go through some of the monsters. I will not say I'm going to do this. I might actually organize them up and maybe each week, maybe hit on one, and so that, and maybe as a one of the many topics that we have for that episode. Anyway, so with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.